Children are a blessing from God, but when parents reject and ignore His wisdom and teaching about parenting, children can grow up to be a curse to their parents and to the world around them. What does the Bible say about parents and children, education, and child discipline? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this powerful and critical topic in his teaching series, Raising Godly Children. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the nation. We don't have time to wait for the intro to roll, ladies and gentlemen, because we are live in Denver on a hot, hot Monday afternoon. I want to welcome everybody to the 50,000-watt blowtorch for the gospel, AM 670 KLTT. It's Bob Enyart Live, but I am not Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I'm a sometime pew warmer at Denver Bible Church. I'm Doug McBurney, host of the Weekly Worldview, found on iTunes and at theweeklyworldview.com, and listen to religiously at my mom's house. By the way, the Weekly Worldview was on hiatus for about a month because I was kidnapped by aliens. But I have returned, and Daryl Berkey had a chance to listen to the first Weekly Worldview in weeks and weeks. He listened to it last night, and he's got a rave review. He said, "Doug, I made it through about the first 15 minutes, and then I fell asleep." So you'll definitely want to tune in, ladies and gentlemen. Go to theweeklyworldview.com or go to iTunes. All right. Now, let's get right to the news of the day. By the way, folks, I was out gathering personhood signatures. Let me tell you how dedicated my children are. My three-year-old almost passed out. She was working so hard over this past weekend. It was amazing. Folks, the January 9th deadline is upon us. So get out there, get some signatures. I'll return to that later. I want to hear from you on this story, ladies and gentlemen. I've got a story. Where is this story? Out of Phoenix, Arizona. A 14-year-old boy. Listen to this. A 14-year-old boy and his siblings, age 8, 10, and 12, were at home alone when a woman rang the doorbell last Friday. The boy chose not to open the door because his mom and dad taught him, don't be opening the door for people you don't recognize. Pretty good child rearing right off the bat. Anyway, the situation quickly grew dangerous as the 14-year-old heard a loud bang on the door. He grabbed his siblings and he rushed them all upstairs, and on the way up, he grabbed his father's pistol. Yeah. Now, when he got to the top of the stairs, he saw an armed man break through the front door and point a gun at him. Acting swiftly, the 14-year-old shot the 37-year-old attacker, the suspect, did not get a shot off, but the 14-year-old did. The man was taken to the hospital with an anesthetic. So my question to you, ladies and gentlemen, what should we charge this 14-year-old boy with? He obviously needs to be punished. What should the punishment be for not allowing the attacker to shoot first? There should be some punishment, folks. If you have an idea as to how the Phoenix justice system should punish this young man. Is that Joe Arpaio's district, Phoenix? If you think Sheriff Joe, call me and tell me what you think Sheriff Joe should charge this 14-year-old boy with. You can reach us, if you choose to do so, at 800-836-9278. That's 800-8-ENYART. For the alphanumerically challenge, that's 800-836-9278. 9278. Tell me what charges should be brought against this unnamed 14-year-old boy who had the temerity to violate the rules of engagement and not allow the enemy to fire first. All right. No, now that's in maybe the rules of engagement only apply to our military in Afghanistan. Maybe in Phoenix you are allowed to shoot before the enemy shoots at you first. We might have to call Sheriff Joe and get some clarification. What's up with you people? Nobody has an idea of what this young man should be punished with? What should he be sentenced to? I gave you the number. It's 800-836-9278. Don't be nervous. Call the show. I'll be nice. All right. Anyway, I wanted to start with something uplifting. I like to do that. I like to start with something uplifting. And I really like to get people's opinions, but as you can clearly tell, I've already formed my opinions. And if you call me and give me yours, it will only be window dressing. It won't affect me in any way. All right. Now, let's get to the politics file. By the way, is there something I missed at the beginning? It seems like I missed something key to the introduction of the show. Maybe not. Anyway, I'm a little rusty because, you know, having been abducted by aliens and then yesterday almost suffering heat stroke in the sun, out gathering signatures for personhood, I might be a little bit punchy, a little bit delirious. So try to bear with me. But the kingmakers in Washington, D.C. are beginning to line up on the impending vice presidential pick of one Mitt Romney. Yes. Who is Mitt going to pick for vice president? Now, don't call me on this because this is a story I really don't care about. I only mentioned this story as a vehicle for a joke that I wrote. That's the only reason I'm mentioning this story. Anyway, my bold prediction is that Mitt Romney will select Marco Rubio as his vice president. How can I tell? Well, I've seen several interviews with Marco over the past few days. And Marco Rubio has always been a staunch advocate of pro-life, pro-family, family values type things. And Marco Rubio has dropped social issues like marriage, like child killing. He's dropped any mention of those issues faster than a Mormon laundry can turn around a set of those holy underwear. That's how fast Marco Rubio dropped any reference to social issues. He was asked on a show the other night, what's the number one problem facing America? 2 years ago, Marco Rubio would have said, it's the cultural decline. And he would have launched into one of his characteristically uplifting and inspirational speeches. But I don't know when it was. Last night, 2 nights ago on some Fox News show, Rubio is asked, what is the biggest issue confronting America? And he said, it's growth. Growth. We need economic growth. We need economic growth. We've got to have economic growth. What we need is someone who understands economic growth. And oddly enough, the top of the hour news update involved violence, bludgeoning, strangling, beatings, murders, death, bloodshed in the streets. And I turned to my wife and I said, how is Marco Rubio's growth going to fix that? What we just saw at the top of the news hour. Anyway, we were both nonplussed and we're very disappointed in Mr. Rubio that he would sell out to pagan, pro-homosexual, pro-abortion Mitt Romney. And he's the conservative selection this year, ladies and gentlemen, for president. Oh, we have a caller on the line. I apologize. Let's go to Pat in Ohio. Pat, speak your mind. I'm here, Pat. It's Doug McBurney sitting in for Bob Enyart. Speak your mind.
Yes, I think that the 14-year-old that you talked about on the radio.
The 14-year-old who was in flagrant violation of the rules of engagement, as far as I can tell, Pat. What's your thoughts?
I think that I don't think that he should be charged with anything. I think he should be given an award.
Pat?
I think that anybody, whether they're 14 years old or 44 years old or 84 years old, should have the right to protect their homes, no matter what. But if somebody's breaking in, that kid needs to have an award.
Are you aware that a man who we must presume was innocent until he's proven guilty, he was shot, Pat? Surely we have to charge this boy with something.
I know that he shot him, but he was breaking into his home.
Well, no, we have to assume he's innocent, Pat. We have to assume that. Didn't you know that? That's part of the rules of engagement, Pat.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry. I'm on my cell phone.
That's okay, Pat, because the things I was saying were so stupid that you not hearing them is probably improved your IQ because I was being completely facetious. Pat, you win the award because the boy should be given an award. Pat, I have a hard time arguing with you.
Well, this is just a personal thing. I think that God gave us the right to defend our homes. He gave us the right to know what was right and what was wrong. And that 14-year-old knew what was right. He was protecting his home and his family.
Preach it, sister. Pat in Ohio. Pat, that's not a personal thing. It's a universal truth. that God put in our hearts the knowledge to be able to tell between right and wrong, and to know that we have an obligation to defend the innocent against those who would do them harm, Pat.
And that's right.
Pat, it sounds like your mama and your daddy raised you right.
They most certainly did.
Praise the Lord. Pat, you're the reason Bob calls us all the brightest audience in the nation. Thank you, Pat, and God bless you in the great state of Ohio.
Thank you.
Amen. There is hope. There is hope for society, because there's people like Pat out there who have not completely abandoned and lost all their common sense. All right. Now, what was it? Oh, I was going off on Marco Rubio. That's my bold prediction, is that Marco Rubio is the guy. He's going to sell out. He's going to sell out to Mitt Romney faster than a Mormon laundry can turn around a pair of those holy underwear. Yep, that's how fast. See there, now they laugh. They had to hear it twice. It's a very sophisticated joke, yeah. It's one of those ones you have to hear two or three times before you... all right, let's go to the domestic tranquility file, ladies and gentlemen. If you have not noticed, there is a significant lack of domestic tranquility in the land. And I can't remember if it's part of the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence that talks about the government's obligation to secure the blessings of liberty, assure domestic tranquility. Is that the Declaration or is that the... No, it's the Constitution itself, but it's the preamble, which the lawyers say doesn't really count. Yeah. They just wrote that because they had some extra parchment at the top and they just needed to fill that up. Yeah, they say it doesn't really. Anyway, domestic tranquility. Let's go to Seattle. A man is under arrest after shoving his wife from a moving car on Interstate 90. And, well, let me just tell you what happened. Troopers found a woman alongside the road, and she told them that her husband had thrown her from the vehicle while driving down I-90. One of the troopers located the husband's vehicle driving erratically. On the highway, they pulled him over, and the husband was taken into custody and placed in the back seat of the trooper's patrol car. Now, shortly after that, the husband managed to break out the patrol car window. He got out of the car and attacked the trooper who had pulled him over. Now, the trooper was able to beat the man into submission. He was finally subdued and taken into custody. This is your average American couple circa 2012. You know, if this is the state of normal marriage, if this is the way normal married people treat each other in America, it's no wonder the homosexuals are winning the argument that marriage really doesn't mean anything anymore. And it can apply to them, to boys and boys and girls and all of that stuff. We, the normal people, are not doing a very good job of promoting the idea of normal marriage. I say we. I have never thrown my wife out of a moving vehicle. I have not. I did smuggle her across the Mexican border in the trunk of my car once. But that's a whole nother story, and I probably shouldn't even say that, because I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on smuggling a foreigner across the border. There might not be. In which case, that never actually happened. It's a story I made up years ago just to entertain people at parties. Okay, let's go to the science, really, file. We're going to go to one, James Lovelock. Are we familiar with James Lovelock? Well, this article, which I took down from the Associated Press, they call James Lovelock the godfather of global warming. The hardest working man in global warming science. The godfather of global warming. Well, he's given an interview to MSNBC in which he acknowledged that he'd been unduly alarmist about all this climate change hysteria. Yeah, Lovelock, according to the Associated Press, they say he's a world-renowned scientist. Now, listen to this, because at some point in his past, he must have been a pretty bright fellow. Lovelock's invention of the electron capture detector back in 1957. You all know the electron, what's it called? The electron capture detector, the one we all have in every kitchen now, right? He invented it in 1957. And it enabled scientists to measure chlorofluorocarbons in the air. Yes. And other various pollutants. And the invention of this device, this electron capture detector, that led to, in many ways, according to the AP, it led in many ways to the birth of the modern environmental movement. So he invented a device for capturing electrons. I think that's fairly impressive. He must have been a smart guy at one point in time. They say that since his invention back in 1957, I think he's pretty much just been a grant-getting machine. He helps people get grants. He gets grants. He survives on government grants. He does studies of studies that study the environment and the atmosphere. Cow flatulence, things like, yeah, whatever. That's what he is now. But at one time, he seems like he was a bright fellow. Now, Lovelock, according to the Associated Press, he's a world-renowned scientist, and his Gaia theory, that's right, I said his Gaia theory, he has a theory that the Earth operates as a single living organism, dude. Yeah. And there's colors. Dude. Wow. Anyway, I think he came up with that sometime in the 60s after he abandoned the whole inventing scientific devices. Anyway, his Gaia theory, they say. What do they say about his Gaia theory? I don't really care. I just wanted to do that whole stoner hippie bit. That's why I mentioned. No, his Gaia theory has had profound impact on the development of global warming theory, which is why everyone who talks about global warming, you think, what is this person smoking? Because this guy has had such a tremendous influence. Now, Lovelock says he thinks he was too alarmist back in the 60s and 70s when he talked about global warming. But according to the AP, he still believes anthropogenic global warming is occurring and that mankind must lower our greenhouse gas emissions. But he says it's now clear that the doomsday predictions, including his own and Al Gore's, were incorrect. So no doomsday scenario. All of you who are getting ready for doomsday, well, it just ain't happening. At least it's not coming from Gaia. Gaia's not as mad at us as we thought. But the Associated Press goes on to point out, Lovelock says greens. I'm not talking about salads. I'm talking about people who want to keep your money and your property and give it to their cronies. We used to call them communists, socialists, Bolsheviks. Now they call themselves greens. He says the Greens have treated global warming like a religion. And he wonders why. Well, he came up with the Gaia theory. Didn't you understand that all these stoner hippies you were talking to would take it seriously, Mr. Lovelock? You know, he's got to feel like, who's the guy who wrote the novel that ended up becoming a religion? The Scientology guy? Does anyone? L. Ron Hubbard. He's got to feel like L. Ron Hubbard. You know, L. Ron Hubbard's got to wake up one day and say, what? People are sending me money? This is a real religion? Okay, I'll go with that. You know. Anyway, this guy's like the L. Ron Hubbard of the environmentalist movement. He mocks the idea that modern economies can be powered by wind turbines. And finally, about claims that the science is settled on global warming, he says, one thing that being a scientist has taught me is that you can never be certain about anything. Mr. Lovelock, you can be certain about one thing. You are on your way to hell with jet rockets, my friend. You need to stop and you need to check yourself, because it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God after having created a worldwide crisis that's not a crisis and a pseudo-religion amongst the stupid. You and L. Ron Hubbard, okay? There's one thing we can be certain about, is that you will be cast into eternal outer darkness. Unless, of course, you repent, which there is still room and there is still time to do. Now, let's go to the war. Do we want to go to the war? Do we want to go to justice? We got a justice story. We got a war story. Let's go to Egypt. No, wait a minute. Let's not. Let's go to Egypt in a figurative sense, because I'm sure it'd be quite uncomfortable for someone with the melanin content of, say, Doug McBurney to go to Tahrir Square over this week. This is from the Politico, which, if I'm not mistaken, the Politico is a bunch of interns who were all fired by the New York Times at the same time. And they started this website, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. It just seems like that. The White House has congratulated Egypt's president-elect Mohammed. Did you get that? His name is Mohammed. Well, it's Egypt, I suppose we can understand. Mohammed Morsi, the White House congratulated him. And folks, the building, the White House, the building didn't congratulate him. It means President Barack Obama called him up with the assalamu alaikum. What did they say? Allah assalamu alaikum? Like that. Yeah. Obama personally called Mohammed Morsi this past Sunday evening to congratulate the Muslim Brotherhood frontman on his election in Egypt shortly after Morsi had made comments saying that, Allah be willing, our capital will be Jerusalem. That's what Morsi said. He said, if Allah be willing, our capital will be Jerusalem. And so Barry picks up the phone. Hey, Mohammed, congratulations. That's awesome. You're the president. Hey, I'm the president too. Isn't it great? Barry called the presidential election in Egypt. He called it a milestone in the country's transition to the caliphate. Their transition to democracy is what Mr. Obama suggested. Let's see. He said he looks forward to working with Mohammed on their shared goals of undermining Israel and Christendom. No. Working to build their transition toward democracy. I keep misreading these articles. I don't know what it is. It's as if I have a preconceived notion about guys named Mohammed who've been in the Muslim Brotherhood their whole life. It's as if I'm prejudging him. I really need to give democracy a chance to blossom. You know, stop being so jaded about everything. Barry says, we will stand with the Egyptian people as they pursue their aspirations for killing Jews, conquering Jerusalem, and oppressing women. Oh, I'm sorry, I misread my teleprompter. I meant pursue their aspirations for democracy, dignity, and opportunity. I couldn't get the whistle going. He's got the whistle. Yeah, I think he's got, someone did a bad job on his veneers. Yeah. Yeah, they make them a little too thick and then you whistle all the time. It's embarrassing. You know, you'd think a guy of his stature would have gotten a better veneer job than that. Talking about Barry. I don't know why I'm going this direction. Let's see. And he wants to help the Egyptians fulfill the promise of their revolution, which, again, refer back to the killing Jews, the conquering of Jerusalem. That's if you have a realistic view of what's happening in Egypt, which the amateurs in the White House and at the State Department, they have no clue. You know why? They don't know what to do because they worship democracy. And when you worship democracy and the mobs elect radical Islamist maniacs, you have to step back and say, well, that's democracy. It's great. It's wonderful. Remember when Hamas took the Gaza Strip in a democratic election? George Bush is sitting there. He doesn't know what to say. They've just elected people who want to bomb and kill innocent Jewish children. But hey, it's democracy. It's got to be good. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see democracy breaking out amongst a bunch of religious fanatics practicing a satanic religion hell-bent on dominating the world. But as long as it's democratic, it must be good. Don't worship democracy, ladies and gentlemen. Don't worship the Constitution. Worship God. Everything else is a side deal. Let's see here. What do I want to do? Do I want to do the story? I'm going to do this story, and I don't know why. Maybe because it's just so outrageous. This is from Manchester Township, New Jersey. Elizabeth Lloyd is seeking more than $150,000 damages from an incident that occurred at a Little League baseball game 2 years ago. She was struck in the face with a baseball that 11-year-old catcher Matthew Migliaccio threw a baseball at a Little League game, and it struck this woman in the face. A tragedy, I'm sure. Well, Elizabeth Lloyd has filed a lawsuit. Back in April, she alleges that Migliaccio's errant throw was intentional and reckless, and that his throw assaulted and battered her and caused her severe, painful, and permanent injuries. She also says Migliaccio's actions were negligent and careless through engaging in inappropriate physical and or sporting activity near this woman. Now, the woman was sitting in the stands at a Little League game. How can you convince a judge to accept a case in which an 11-year-old Little Leaguer is accused of inappropriate physical or sporting activity at a baseball game? He threw a baseball. Admittedly, maybe his aim could have been a little better. Or maybe the guy who was supposed to catch it, you know, those first basemen, they're inherently unreliable. Maybe, but to say that it's inappropriate physical or sporting activity near her when she's in the stands at a baseball game. Now, her husband has chimed in with another charge. He's suing for the loss of services, society, and consortium of his wife. So she's obviously been so psychologically damaged by being hit in the face by a baseball at a baseball game that, well, they don't get along anymore. It's unbelievable that this suit could actually, I mean, it's been filed since April, so apparently the court is willing to take a look at this, and it's outrageous. And what more is there to say? Oh, by the way, they've demanded a jury trial. Why? So they can take advantage of the stupidity of the average New Jersey citizen who will probably find Migliacci somehow responsible and have to write a check to this woman. Anyway, that's the state of justice in America. A country that regulates the murder of innocent people, but is willing to hear a case about a woman who got hit with a baseball at a baseball game, and she claims that the throwing of the baseball was reckless and inappropriate at that particular baseball diamond. You know, normally, you wouldn't expect baseballs to be flying around out there. But then again, normally, in a civilized country, you wouldn't expect the government and the church to endorse the regulated murder of innocent people. So things are a bit topsy-turvy. So you can understand why I get a little bit tense sometimes, because the whole world seems to have spun into utter madness. But I'm going to go out again this week, and I don't care if it's 100 degrees. I don't care. I'm going to go out. I've got my petitions. Now I've got about 12. I got about a dozen of them in a bag, and I take them just about everywhere I go. And I will go out, and I'll gather some more signatures. I need you to go out and get at least 50. If you're listening in this audience and you haven't gotten at least 50 signatures, well, I'm ashamed of you. You need to just get out, step up. Come on, we've only got a few weeks left. You can do it. It's good exercise. Drink lots of water, though, because it is hot out there. But the July 9th mail-in deadline for personhood petitions is fast approaching, ladies and gentlemen. Can you go out and get 50 signatures? I know you can do it. How do I know you can do it? Because my 11-year-old daughter has done it under my strict supervision, of course. But she has done it. I understand she has a lot more energy than those of us who are over 40. But she's done it. So you can do it. Folks, if you have petitions that are not full, mail them in anyways. There's an address on the front of the petition. Mail it in now and ask for another that you can take out over these next few weeks as we draw closer to the deadline. And get your 50 signatures. If you've gotten 50, go get 50 more. This is the most significant social movement of your generation. So please participate. And also, go to KGOV.com. Visit me at theweeklyworldview.com if you so choose. And as always, as Bob would tell you, do right and risk the consequences.
Marriage is the very foundation of human society. But it was God's idea to begin with. What is God's plan for your marriage? How can you know? What can you do to learn and grow with your spouse to honor God in your marriage? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this deeply personal and critically important topic in his teaching series, God's Plan for Marriage. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.